it comes. The latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, and we're going to put a great spotlight on the Southwest tonight. The name of our show is Tank's Green Stuff. Joining me in studio is Tank himself. We need to get a picture before you leave. Please join me in welcoming Jason Tankersley, who is the CEO of the Fairfax Companies. Since 1989, the Fairfax Companies have been true leaders in the business of sustainability on so many levels, and business leaders as well. And Jason just happens to be one of my favorite people on the planet. So now you have that bit of information. So, my friend, welcome to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. It's great to have you in studio.
Well, it's great to be back. Thank you, Gina, for having me.
And you have such a great radio voice. I forgot that. It's really a good radio voice.
Hey, Gurgle Fry.
So can you start with what is the Fairfax Companies, when it all started, and what goes on at Fairfax?
Well, the Fairfax Companies, a family-run business. My dad and I started a landfill operation, a little tiny operation in the middle of Tucson over 20 years ago. And at that time, I was running equipment in the afternoons and handwriting tickets for a handful of customers. And we really were just landfilling at that time. And so my dad passed away just about the same time that we started all that, and before we had our actually permits or anything up and going. And had to kind of make a decision of where we wanted to go, and I thought recycling was more advantageous and the right thing to do. So we transferred our focus from filling up a hole to trying to divert as much material away from that hole as possible. So since then, we have really concentrated on developing products from the waste people throw away in our operation. We still are a classical recycling operation where we recycle the steel, copper, aluminum, paper, plastic, cardboard, those kind of things. But we also try and make products with the waste, and we deal with a lot of green waste, landscape waste from landscapers in Tucson. And one of the products we make is compost, amongst other things like mulch and topsoil, and that's one of our lines, and that's the Tank's Green Stuff division of the Fairfax Companies.
Which we're really going to talk about, because that has been quite a journey, and I've been just looking through the window to see all that it has taken to go into that core service. So recycling and waste management services, what kinds of things do you recycle? You mentioned some of them, but you take it from post-construction waste and green waste.
Mm-hmm. From landscapers. Landscapers bring us their what's called green waste in the industry. The landscape waste we take and we segregate. We pull out the palm and the cactus, and sometimes they have other contaminants in there, paper and plastic. We try and get all that out of there so that we're only really dealing with trees. We don't compost grass because of all the chemicals, the nasty chemicals, Roundup and other weed killers and insecticides that people like to put on their lawns, because their lawns have been devoid of the natural
of
nutrients.
Any real
right?
food.
Any real food. So those tend to be very common, and the golf courses do that as well. So we actually segregate that out. We use that material for, we mix it with dirt and use it for grading. Keep it out of our product. But we make a really high-end compost. Takes about 4 months to create one batch, and our ingredients are dairy manure. We usually get most of our manure from Shamrock Organic Dairy. We also work with
it's organic manure?
Most of it. We try to use organic manure, but Shamrock's got two different operations at their farm, and so we help them with their manure removal, and we'd utilize that in our process. But our process is we keep the temperatures high enough for long enough that any antibiotics or anything that could be in that dairy manure is completely broken down and turned inert. So and we also use a organic elemental sulfur just because of the pH in our water here is so high, and our plants tend to be actually have pretty high pH too. So we like to use that sulfur that brings down the pH, and it's better for growing vegetables and things like that. So in the four-month process, we create a more of a humus-type product. It's just a very rich, dense compost.
And it looks like that. When you go by your properties, yeah. It's beautiful. I mean, it's a dark, rich.
Nice black.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Smells very earthy, very, you know, no, it doesn't smell like rotting food or anything.
Right, right.
And we don't use food in it, but it doesn't smell like rotting waste. We actually fully compost it to where it's considered very stable under the U.S. Composting Council's stringent guidelines.
But so. I want to go backwards a little bit, because you had recycling and waste management services, mm-hmm. and then roll-off services, okay? But this is a whole new product line. It's like, what fascinates me, and tell us a little bit of the backstory of what you had to learn or your staff had to learn to produce what is one of the highest grade compost available on the market today. You were not a compost expert.
By no
stretch of the imagination. So how did you morph into that, what might be ostensibly one of your most successful product lines?
Yeah, it seems we're growing it at a much faster pace than I had anticipated. And like you said, I didn't know much about compost. It was actually we had a byproduct from material. We were actually processing the landscape waste to provide to Frito-Lay for boiler fuel.
And is that when it started?
That's
I
when
remember
it all, started,
all
yeah.
when that happened. Yes.
About 7-8 years ago. And that contract, they had a hard time actually using our type of vegetation to use as boiler fuel. Now they've gone to pecan shells and just straight pine wood material, you know, so pallets, basically. They grind up old pallets and then
wow.
they do that. So we went from six semi-loads a day, shipping them material to maybe a couple semi-loads a month. But in making that, we had this byproduct, which was the fines. So we would have to screen out the dirt in the small bits of wood, and we didn't know what to do with it, so we started making it in compost. And, you know, I think the first year we made a couple thousand yards. Last year we did about 18,000 yards. This year we will do in upwards of 70,000 yards of compost. So and learning how to compost in this environment's been tricky.
Quite a journey. I mean, did you involve scientists? Who helped? I don't even know that.
Yeah. We are working with the U of A right now.
Right.
We are conducting a study, an independent study with the National Science Foundation and the University of Arizona Agricultural Department, testing not only our compost, but a natural organic fertilizer that we're developing. And this has been fun for me, learning how to do this type of product that can really enhance the soils that we grow in, and concentrating on urban food production. That's been fun. And so developing these, by developing compost and using compost in your soils, you can reduce your watering by 40-50%. And then by using certain types of beneficial microbes and organisms and fungi and other natural and organic ingredients, you can create the most fertile soil that you've ever seen. So we're growing. We just grew carrots, lettuce, and broccoli at the U of A in these test plots, and we tested against one of our competitors,
who shall remain nameless. No shout out for them.
But we're seeing a huge increase in bacterial counts in the soil, nutrition in the leaves and in the florets and the broccoli, and and much less water consumption.
Just winning all around.
Yeah.
And in that process for learning and growing, is back to feed in that equation?
Yes, we use back to feed intensely in our
A great person, David Cohen, who just is as passionate about what he's doing and actually taught me a lot about what it means. You put back to feed on your front porch and it looks like Little Shop of Horrors because everything starts growing like monsters.
Looks like prehistoric.
It really is. A little tiny
prehistoric
bit.
Prehistoric plants, right.
Yeah. But there is that part that I don't quite understand, but I know you do, of really what pesticides do is kill any living thing, including pests. But if you have healthy soil, you don't need pesticides. That's the big rub to me. If it's healthy soil, it's taking care of itself, and it doesn't smell, and you don't have the need for that. And then the soil is giving it life and not have all that dead stuff down at the bottom where it just, you know, accumulates.
Healthy lawns. I don't promote a lot of lawns in Arizona, but some of the buildings that we own and houses, you know, rentals.
Yeah, but if you're going to have them and it reduces water use by 40%.
Well, I haven't watered my lawn in over a month, and it's still as thick and green as it comes.
Healthy.
You walk, just walking on it, you can feel the difference because of the. It's almost squishy like sponge.
From a business perspective, as a businessman, you had very more traditional books of business for the recycling and the waste management services and roll-off services. Didn't you have to develop, or did you, a whole new marketing strategy? Because this is much more retail than dealing with, you know, construction companies and landscaping companies. What was the business model that you had to think about in terms of where you're going to sell Tank's green stuff?
Well, we have, you know, about 80 to 90% of the landscapers in Tucson utilize our facilities.
That's amazing.
And it's a lot. We do a lot of material. What we don't get is a lot of stuff down in more South Tucson near the city landfill. They get a lot of that waste, but
because it's a time and money issue, transportation and how long it takes. Yeah, getting it to your landfills, which they'd probably prefer, but it's half hour longer maybe.
So yeah, but my thought was to create a one stop shop so these landscapers can bring in their waste, they can drop it off, and then they can leave our facilities with value added products like the compost, like mulch, topsoil. We also recycle the concrete. We have asphalt millings that they can buy and use on driveways, you name it. We try to make it a one-stop shop and an efficient.
So they come in and they drop stuff off and then they leave with stuff?
That's
is
the
that
goal.
How it works? That's great. I mean, it really is. It's
I try
very
to flag
efficient.
Them down if they're leaving an empty truck.
Where's your Tank's green stuff or your wood chips or whatever? Make it all happen. I love it. Okay. So you are marketing, and I know that I want listeners, because we've got such a great listener base in the Tucson area for these Down to Earth shows. And the website, we don't have to go into the details of it, but it is thefairfaxcompanies.com, and it lists all the places. You're marketing in Ace Hardware. It's commercially available.
Yep, almost all the Ace Hardwares in southern Arizona now are carrying it. Sierra Vista, Douglas, Benson, Green Valley, Nogales. I think we're as far north as Casa Grande. We're moving into Home Depot soon with our bulk products. 30 Home Depots will be carrying
that's great
our bulk
news,
products.
Right?
To
get something that's locally produced and locally manufactured into Home Depots.
Right.
It's kind of like getting in Costco for gardening.
You have to keep knocking on that door frequently.
I bet. I'm sure that a lot of people are in there. It's like the same thing. If you can get your salsa in Costco, it can either make you or break you. That's the hard part.
Right. Well,
do you ever wonder about, can it get to a point, maybe in your dreams, or is it a nightmare, that you will not have enough supply from the landscaping waste to meet the demand? Is that a dream?
That would be a dream.
That would be a nice problem to have.
If anybody's been past one of our composting facility on Ina, they will see we have large stockpiles of green waste that we
so feel
have not
free
been able
to knock
process.
On your door to come and come get the compost. It's so funny, things like I was there when you started this and thinking about like the Tucson Backyard Gardeners site, how they put it up, they came and they found it, and those are avid gardeners with a Facebook page that grew like really like organic back to feed plants. Mm-hmm. It really grew quickly, and they're some of the ones that started spreading the word. It's organic growth.
They've been a great bunch for sure. The Tucson Organic Gardeners and the other organic gardening operations are groups in town, nonprofits, the schools. We've made a real concerted effort to donate to the school community gardens and help build their gardens. I mean, when we first started, I can't tell you how many gardens I went out and I dug myself with our equipment for, you know, churches and other organizations. So we really made a concerted effort to start a grassroots campaign to get that out there. And that's what I was really focused on for a long time. Now that I have understood, or now that I do understand what the ramifications are as far as water conservation for these golf courses that have used our product in concert with Back to Feed, they're saving huge amounts of water. David Cohen just told me the other day that Randolph Park is watering just a couple times a week for 20 minutes at a time, whereas Udall Park, which is not using Back to Feed in our compost, is watering 6 to 7 days a week for 40 minutes at a time. And so much of the water just runs off because of the compaction. So
what will it take to move that needle forward? Why isn't it being used on any municipally owned, city golf course? Why is it not?
They're using
it.
They're getting there. They're, you know, it's each one's got a different greenskeeper and person in charge. And
These
guys tend to be very
kind of invested in
what they've learned over the years, and they don't like to change it. It's easy to quantify what kind, you know, a petrochemical fertilizer. They know exactly how much per square foot that they can apply, and really what the benefit they're going to see quickly is. But the problem is, by doing that, using those petrochemical fertilizers, you actually cumulatively kill year over year over year any of the nutrients, and so then you get to start getting the diseases, and then they have to start treating the diseases.
Yeah, dead soil.
Yeah, so
it's really sad. And to me, it's like you talk about water use. Who isn't talking about water use? That's a consciously living human being, about, especially here in the Southwest. And our city water department has done such outstanding efforts to make sure that we have water and conserve it and preserve it and store it. And then you have it going on golf courses. I think it really ticks everyone off, especially if you don't play golf. It's like, look at all that water that's being used.
Right.
So it's really annoying. So the business model was to literally just start making the stuff, great packaging, really fun tank screen stuff, and then knocking on doors. And you have Magic Emily, who's so passionate about it.
Yeah, Emily Rocky's our sales and marketing representative. She's trained in plant science, and she's fantastic. She's a great resource to go to, and she can answer a lot of the questions that I can't answer because
I know
I don't have exactly
really smart
a green
this,
thumb.
Yeah, she's got it going on, and she lives it. She eats healthy, and she brings healthy food to the office, and this is a woman that knows literally her stuff and Tank's green stuff. You mentioned something about that I really wanted to weave into this conversation about how I know you and I are big supporters of locally owned businesses and why it matters. And an example that you weren't telling it for that example, but immediately registered with me, is here's Jason Tankersley, the CEO of the Fairfax Companies, operating machinery to go put the composting in gardens in community schools. That doesn't happen. You're not locally owned. I'm just going out on a limb here and saying that the owner of Home Depot is probably not plowing a lot of lawns. I know he's got other things, or getting ready, you know, community gardens. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a brighter future for people, it's a really good example to help with the, you know, food deserts. That's a scary thought that could happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of really bad news looking out to the future, and this helps mitigate it or makes us safer. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's been the focus of Fairfax, is to actually create green jobs, create local products, manufacture locally, and serve geographic regions. So, you know, right now we're really focused on Southern Arizona, but the the word has gotten out about some of our other products that we're developing, and people as far away as Texas and Northern California are knocking on the door. They're interested in how we do it, and you know, we don't cut any corners, and we don't use fillers, and we test religiously for nutrient contents and contamination and all these things, and you know, as far away as Mexico too.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, since it is such a gateway. We are the gateway,
right?
The ports that we have from Mexico, the largest supplier of vegetables comes through those ports.
Mm-hmm.
Are you making connections with them?
So we're talking to a couple different companies right now, and one of the big deals with those companies is the cost of transportation. Is such, you know, it's moving dirt, so dirt is heavy and
yes,
not efficient to take back, but also these trucks are going back to Mexico empty. So if we can figure out a way to make it economical for them to fill up their truck with we sell these large totes, which are 1 cubic yard totes, we can load up their trucks very quickly and get that to them, or even transfer down to Nogales and have a distribution
point down there. Wow. What about, this is such an amateur question, not knowing anything about it. What is the shelf life for compost? Is that one of the blessings that it's forever? Once you cook it, which I want you to tell me how you cook it, and it gets ready, then can you... Is it okay to just sit there, or do you have to keep doing anything to it?
No, it should be good for years. I mean, in our bag products, what happens is the bacteria, if it dries out too much, it just kind of goes dormant. So as soon as you start using it and get water back on it, those bacteria colonies will start to repopulate.
And so it's a great product to have because there's no expiration date.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea. I have to ask you about this. And if I read this right, is there something that was on your website that I read about ProCoco Organic Coconut something?
Yes, ProCoco. Tanks Pro is our potting soil mix.
Okay. That's an interesting name.
Yeah.
ProCoco?
Yeah, ProCoco.
Who came up with that?
Great,
I was not in on that brainstorming session.
Great group of guys. That's another business we just work with. They have a very high-end organic coconut product, and it comes in chips and a cocoa peat, and we actually sell them in compressed blocks. We uncompress the blocks at one of our facilities, and we blend it. We have a 50% tanks green stuff, 50% cocoa peat blend, which makes an excellent potting soil, and coconut's amazing. One, it can help maintain the pH level of the soil at around 7. What you're looking for is a good soil is around 7, between 7 and 8. So it helps keep that that pH neutral, and it also has a huge water retention capability. So between the compost and the organic matter in our compost and the cocoa peat, it's a fantastic product.
Unbelievable. Another one that just diversifies the product lines. You know, going back again, I keep thinking of the history that we have together and watching what happened with the Fairfax companies. And I think we all divide our lives into pre-2008 and post-2008.
Right.
But, I mean, it's absolutely true. Did developing the tanks green stuff and moving in that direction, was it born out of the pain of things slowing down in the building industry? Or how did you decide this is a really good direction to go? Because landscaping wasn't as affected as much as building, right?
Well, the landscaping stayed a lot, you know, steadier for sure. That helped us weather the recession. It's also a massive amount of the urban waste stream. I mean, it's bulky. It's hard to deal with. The grinders that we use to grind this stuff up are 1,000 horsepower, and they, you know, cost $600,000-$700,000 a piece and hundreds of dollars an hour to run. So it's a very expensive proposition.
Yes.
And just putting it into a landfill, it doesn't compact very well, so because it's so spongy, and so you take up a lot of really valuable airspace. So getting off track.
But thinking how to use it, that's how your mind works.
Trying to find a use for all these materials coming into our facility was paramount. And yes, in 2008, I thought I had this great deal with the Frito-Lay account, which I found a use for it.
Right.
Unfortunately, the way they designed the boilers, they're not able to scrub out the high chlorine that's in our wood material here. So when that didn't happen, we were already kind of making compost with the byproduct. We said, well, let's expand this. But also during 2008, we deal with a lot of construction waste, demolition waste. Well, that all dried up. And then several of our big customers, which were Republic Services and Waste Management, who Waste Management has come back to me, but Republic Services pulled out of our facility, and it created a huge economic impact and probably forced my hand into coming up with another business. And I did on that end, and ended up started Tanks Roll-Off and Recycling so that we could maybe get back some of that market share.
And it's really all in alignment with your core values, because you really do care about the environment. You're a rabid environmentalist. You get it. You know the path we're on. And keeping waste out of the landfill and repurposing it is part of what you're doing. And the green waste is such a key part of that. What about the, why can't you put cactus and palm? Why do you have to take cactus and palm leaves out?
Well, palm doesn't break down. For whatever reason, it's so tough.
It's so tough.
Fibrous. We still grind it up, but it doesn't break down in that amount of time. So you have these big fibers in there. And also the cactus, you still get some little cactus needles and things that can create problems. And I don't want somebody who's working with our soil with their hands or something to get cactus needles
right,
in there.
So right, right.
We've been looking at other things. The blocks that we worked with Kurt Beyer and developing
the
building block.
Tell us about the blocks. I mean, they're amazing.
Well, the building block is amazing, and it's the brainchild of Kurt Beyer from Beyer Renewable Fuels. He's also created a fuel pellet utilizing the same kind of technology. But these blocks, we can dry the cactus and palm and then other woods that we can't recycle here, treated lumber, press board, particle board. We can take all those things, we can mix them together, and we can blend them with the polyethylene plastic bags that are reject out of the RE community and other recycling operations. So we can take all that and we can heat it up just so the plastic is pliable enough to where it can be infused into the wood. And so it actually encapsulates the wood, and we put it through this press, and we make a building block that is fireproof, bugproof, waterproof, bulletproof, basically almost indestructible, and has an R17.5 insulation value, which is a regular CMU or concrete block has like a 2.
Oh my gosh. You know, yeah. So, vast difference. I mean, that's another thing in that company. I can't imagine that. That won't take off like crazy as the demand grows.
You would think, but Southern Arizona is still lagging in the recovery market. So
that's why you're getting knocks on the door from California and Texas. It's like, come on, let's go. For other those things, it's unbelievable.
Right.
So the other part of it, and we don't have much time left because it really goes fast, is about your philosophy about giving back in 1 minute, which we're going to be finished in 1 minute. as a business owner, it's part of your core values to give back to the community in many ways. Agreed?
Yes. I donate lots of material,
lots of time,
money and time.
Lots of time.
To several nonprofits and boards.
Tucson Clean and Beautiful, I know that. Mm-hmm. And I know you helped with when the zoo was putting on an extension. Lots of things that Jason Tankersley has left a fingerprint. Everybody, this was great. Look out for Tank's Green Stuff. You can find everything you want to know about it at thefairfaxcompanies.com. This April 30th, Dave Hutchins, President and CEO of Tucson Electric Power, and Mike Baruch from TEP Energy Efficiency Programs. Tune in to find out what's going on with our utility company. Make it a great green night, everybody. Thanks for being here.